Okay, yes, we're back.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the kids are losing their minds now. Okay, what's up?
So you were telling us about your newest work.
Is that they are critical. They are in a critical but stable condition. Hence the title, okay? So it's the three couples. But then there's also a dead body. Right? Okay, this is Angela Makora. So yes, unfortunately, there's a dead body, my poor kids. Okay, so the dead body, the book kind of flips through the lives of the three married couples, mm-hmm. and this situation, a younger man is in his apartment with his older lover, and mm-hmm. you know, they've been together, they're seeing each other, it's a clandestine affair. But then the woman dies, you know, they make love and then they fall asleep. And then when he wakes up, she's gone. She's dead, you know. So it's natural causes. He didn't kill her. She's dead. It could be, we're obviously going to find out what the cause is, but obviously it's something, it's a natural cause. It's either, you know, she had a heart attack or something like that. At this point, we're speculating. Obviously, it's the beginning of the book. So the book kind of keeps on panning back to the dead body, because now the guy is Zimbabwean, the woman is South African. So he's worried, because you know, obviously there's a lot of xenophobia in South Africa. He's dating a married South African woman, you know, is what's gonna happen when, how does he tell the husband, you know, hey, I've got your dead wife, come and pick up, like, you don't, obviously he can't say that. And then he calls his friend to say, friend, like, I've got a situation. What do I do? Like, do I call the police? Do I call an ambulance? What do I do? So the friend just kind of freaks him out and gives him all these scenarios, makes him very paranoid about what could happen if he just allows her to just be discovered there in his apartment. So then in terms of that thread of the plot, we need to find out, his name is Lawrence. We want to know what Lawrence and his friend Kuzai decide to do with the dead body. Do they keep it there? Do they just phone the authorities? Do they dispose of it? How do they dispose of it? Is the townhouse complex, I mean, cameras, all of that, you know? And also we are wondering, as we get into the lives of the three married couples, clearly this woman is one of the three women whose lives are being chronicled. And so we need to know, I'm trying to remember my characters now. Is it Mushiri, who is in a critical but stable relationship where the big issue is debt? They are heavily indebted, her and her husband. They love kind of the blingy lifestyle. So they've acquired so much stuff and they've ended up being in this kind of tumultuous situation where they've just surrounded by stuff and they owe a lot of money. Or is it Lerato? Lerato married her varsity sweetheart. They are born again Christians. They decided as Christians that they won't have sex before marriage, right? So that was great. They were both on board with that. But once they get married, like later in their lives, the husband decides no sex after marriage either. And then we'll find out why. No, we'll find out what's going on with the husband and why. You know? Then there's...
Guys, I really hope my mother's not on this live.
Oh my goodness. But if she's red ink and blessed, go,
I can, she just had me go,
she makes me feel like I'm bad.
We love it. Okay. So there's a couple that's just like not having sex.
Yeah, there's a couple that's not having sex. There's a couple that they've got, you can tell, like, they seem to have a great lifestyle and everything. It's on the outside, it looks amazing, you know. The wife is very successful. It's a very long marriage, like it's a two decades, almost three decades long marriage. So everything looks perfect on the outside. But you can tell there's just something about this couple. There's something they're hiding, right? There's just something where the math doesn't add up. So we need to find out, what is this thing? What? There's something off kilter about this couple. What is it? And why is it, you know? And so amongst these three ladies, whose body is this? Which one has had an affair with this Lawrence character and now is dead in his apartment? And we don't know what's going to happen to her body. Yeah, that's it. That's critical but stable.
The comments here, oh my goodness. Toby's like, Batung Angela, say no more. Take all of my money. Listen, I am with you.
Chop my money. When is this? Chop my money.
When is this novel coming out? Because wow, sis.
Hey, I've even shared, that's why I'm saying my publishers are going to be like, you know, you've shared more with people than you have with us. So I sent I had sent an incomplete draft, first draft, and they're waiting for theirs. Which I normally print. So my process is, writers, there's a lot of insecurity in writing. I'm a very insecure writer. I'm always looking for faults and mistakes. And I always feel like maybe the plot is not adding up. It's not beautifully written enough. It's not lyrical. So I went through that process for quite some time. And the publishers are like, can you send us the manuscript already? So now where I am in my insecure editing process is, which is the last kind of stage of my insecurity. I print the draft and then I go through it with a fine tooth comb, a fine pencil, a fine point pen. And I look for errors. I look for things that I'm still not happy with, glaring, issues that just don't make sense in the manuscript. And so I've done that. I've been doing that for the past 2 to 3 days. And then I'm going to fix the errors that I picked up on my laptop. And then I will probably send it to publishers by Friday, which means more editing back and forth. And then probably later in the year, we'll get the book.
So, we're all like locked down in our houses. So it can't be too late.
Can't be May 2021.
No, sis, you can't do that. Like, you just actually cannot. You need to speak to your publisher and to your editor because, wow, I want to know whose body is
it. Body. There's even a chapter called Whose Body? Whose body is it?
So Zuyisa has a question here. She says, since there's a dead body in your book and we're living in the times of corona, if we were told that that the world is ending in 24 hours, what will you do? She'll release the book or release it.
I will publish it online, though. On the Cheeky Natives IG page.
Please, listen.
Like, I'll put the PDF on your page and I'll be like, go wild, people.
Oh my gosh, guys. Oh my goodness. We're actually okay with the rough draft, even. We'll fill in the dots. It's fine.
Yeah, you'll fill in. You'll forgive me for my transgressions, whatever they are. Okay.
So, I mean, I think that you are interested in illusions, right?
Who's listening? Send us the rough drafts. But whom?
I'm with that person. You are interested in illusions, right? Like things not being what they appear to be. And it's sort of a theme that I've seen in a few of your books, right? Things not appearing to be what they are. Or whatever, not being what they appear to be. Yes. So, what I'm curious about, why you have this fascination with illusions and with this like unraveling of stories or unraveling of layers.
I just think as a storytelling technique, I've always found it engaging as a reader myself. So I tend to love books that don't give a lot away and allow the reader to try as much as they can to put together the pieces. I just find that kind of storytelling fascinating. It keeps me wrapped with attention as a reader. And I've also realized that it's also a very challenging technique, to use in your writing process because you have to always give your reader the benefit of intelligence, so you are constantly challenged as a writer to not kind of dumb down the plot, to really stretch your own thinking, because you're kind of in this dance with your reader where you're throwing them clues, but at the same time you don't want to give away too much because you want to keep them guessing, you want them coming back for more, so I just, it's always like even in almost every kind of form of storytelling, it's one of my most compelling kind of techniques that even keep me going back. If it's a story, if I'm reading a book that has that kind of sense of suspense and keeps me guessing, then I'm hooked. You know, I can spend, like, I can sit in the bus and read like half of a book if it's got that kind of suspense and tension and all of that. So yeah, it's just a technique that I really enjoy, both as a reader and as a writer.
So relationships, I think that she writes about relationships in really interesting ways. I think that's also one of your areas, I guess, of fascination is relationships.
Thank you, Rushka. She says that's exactly what you do perfectly. Thank you.
And the Red Black Girl is also saying she loves the unraveling. I'm really curious about relationships, right? So not just between lovers or like people in relationships, because that's, or romantic relationships, but also just relationships between people, right? People who interact daily. And I guess I'm curious about what informs this fascination with relationships. So are you a people watcher? How do you go about writing about relationships in the way that you do, right?
Am I a people? You make me sound like a peeping Tom. Like,
no, because we had
with a long telescope trying to see what the neighbors are doing.
The powers of observation are very important, right? We actually had an author yesterday speak about how she loves to sit at like coffee shops and just have background noise.
I do that a lot.
But also to watch people's interactions, right? Because the way that you write interactions is very realistic and very believable.
Yeah. Yes. No. I'm definitely, I'm fascinated, you know, by humans. I just find people extremely, extremely interesting. And I think I'm drawn to people who just do things differently, who just kind of, you know, dance to their own tune, because I love people who don't follow kind of the predictable path that we expect people to follow, and who make decisions that, you know, are not necessarily expected of, you know, a woman, a mother, a father, a priest, a dad, whatever it is, you know, because I think a lot of people, even the most predictable seeming person has the power to surprise not only others but themselves. And I think that is the interesting thing about the nature of humanity, is that, you know, no matter how well you think you have defined who you are, there is always the possibility that you will do something, or you will make a decision, or you will even choose a path that you never expected yourself, as you know yourself, to choose. And I think that is that lack of, you know, the predictable is what I find very fascinating, and I like to explore. And, you know, as much as people, and I think a lot of my characters make those, you know, they go through, even if the character seems, you know, like a stereotype of something, almost all of them, I would like to think, at some point kind of does this thing where you kind of like, really, did you really just do that? Did you really just say that? And I think that's intrinsic of humanity, of human nature. It's that thing that makes us so different and so amazing and so unique, that I like to tap into.
I actually, someone's commenting on, they're saying that's why Black Widow Society still fascinates me. And it actually, just having heard you speak about Critical But Stable as well, makes me think about secrets, right? All of your characters have some sort of secrets, or there's like a thing about secrets, or not fully telling the truth, or some interesting,
that sounds dodgy.
Some interesting relationships with the truth. I mean, Bunte is very economical with the truth, you know. But there's a relationship between secrets, you know, and I guess it just makes me wonder about your own, I guess, observations about why, and not secrets in the sense of, oh, I'm hiding this thing, but just the ways in which you weave, I guess, secrecy and wanting to not wanting to reveal certain parts of ourselves, which I think is a very human thing to do. But I really am fascinated with the ways in which secrets form such an integral part of the ways in which you write your story, your characters' stories. And I think it's so interesting that this person commented on Black Widow Society as well.
Yeah, so Black Widow Society was a very it was again one of those challenging books to write, because so many people, so many of the characters, especially kind of somebody like Talula and the Lord Nolwazi, now I'm mixing up my characters, sorry, it's been a while since I wrote some of the books, but quite a few people kind of have an ace up their sleeve, and there's a lot of kind of sleight of hand and, you know, those kind of mechanizations. And I find, like I said, like it's always interesting to weave a story around the unpredictable and the unexpected. And it's just I suppose it's also just a technique to keep you interested, to keep you guessing, you know, to give you those gasps, you know, that are always, I think, you know, the kind of delicious little moments that as a reader you're like, ooh, okay, I didn't see that one coming. And yeah.
So Booker Harlequin says she loved Blessed Girl's lingo and the interaction. They were so gassy and organic. And she just commends you for doing a great job.
Thank you. I try to keep it as modern as I could. I mean, I'm 44, so I'm not 25. I'm not a blessed girl. So if somebody comes back to me with that kind of feedback, it's always it's gratifying, because at least it means I got half the job done, you know, because I needed it to have that kind of flavor, and I needed her to not take herself too seriously, to not go around, you know, all prissy and just unrelatable and unrealistic. She had to be the character, and I suppose language and bringing in that local flavor, which is how most young people speak these days. And it's actually quite a fascinating thing that's happening with language now, because you know, even the people that see themselves as very cosmopolitan and upwardly mobile, there was a phase when Black urbanites who saw themselves as upwardly mobile only spoke English with each other, you know, they wouldn't bring in the Kasi element of themselves into the conversation, because it was that phase when you're moving out of the apartheid era and oppression, and you're wanting to be seen as kind of this worldly urbanite. But I love the fact that this generation embraces everything. It embraces, if you're from Kasi, you embrace your Kasiness and you bring it in there, even though you are this supposedly sophisticated, urban, cosmopolitan career person who's educated and whatnot, but you're not discarding that essence, the soil, the trope of the dusty townships. You're not dusting it off completely. You're keeping some of the dust and you're bringing it with you, you know? So it's actually quite a cool thing that's happening with language right now.
And I'm curious about social media, I guess, and its role, like for your writing. Did you do what kind of research did you have to do for Blessed Girl? Because like you said,
shady research. Oh my goodness! Do you know that there was a point where I joined, you know, there was this social media group. I think it was on Facebook, Blesser Finder, something like that. It was a platform where if you're a blesser looking for blessees, you could go onto that, or if you're a blessee looking to be blessed, you could go onto that. So as part of my research, I actually joined that page, and you know, I posted, like, so firstly I asked to join the page, and I said, look, I'm a writer, I'm doing research, and the administrator kind of, okay, he's like, okay, I'll join. And then I asked, you know, do you think I could interview, you know, would I be able to have access to some of your people, both the males and the females? And he said something very interesting. He said, look, it's going to be, I think it'll be easier for you to be able to talk to the girls, but the guys, not so much, you know? And I struggled, you know, during my research process for that book, to talk to the men who were blessing the girls, because, you know, obviously there's clearly, well, not obviously, but clearly there was a bit more shame, you know, in coming out and saying, I'm a blesser and this is what I do. And obviously most of them, or some of them, are married. But I will say this. So I got approached by a potential blesser. This is one of my shadiest moments of of doing the research on this book. So I'm thinking, okay, so if I were in the game, what kind of blesser would I attract? And do you know what kind of blesser I attract?
I really want, I'm curious, please.
I died, you know, really. You want to shame me.
Was it like a teddy? No. Was it a Mr. Emmanuel? I want to know.
It was a taxi driver. I don't know if it was an Uno.
I, yeah, you didn't
I think I'm level. So I get better than levels. There's triple A, so clearly I'm not there. B, no. C, no. D, I think I'm the airtime. I'm the one who's supposed to be asking for airtime.
Look, we don't know. Maybe he's
I get a budgetary issues as well.
It's what issues?
Budgetary issues. I mean, every person has kind of a budget that they can dispense, you know, to their places. So, you know, maybe, I don't know, but you're right. Maybe he owned like a fleet of
taxis. Maybe he had a fleet, you know. Maybe he had a fleet, you know what I'm saying? And also, wouldn't it prove that, you know, there's space for different kinds of blessers in your life?
Yeah, there's an evolutionary process that happens there. Like,
listen, you know, there's space for it, Teddy. There's space
so
for
I should have been patient. I should have been patient.
But don't knock the hustle, yeah, but there's I just want to know if you have a favorite. This is unfair because it's like asking you who is your favorite child. But do you have a favorite book that you've written? You're on book 5. And Critical But Stable sounds like it might just be one of our favorites. But what is your favorite book that you've written and why?
It's probably an unexpected answer, but I would say definitely Black Widow Societies is like has a close place in my little heart. because I found it so challenging writing the book, and because I just found those characters so fascinating. I mean, Tallulah, I still want to meet her in real life and just kind of say hi, you know.
I don't know if I want to meet Tallulah. Hey,
I want to meet Tallulah. I just think she's so
Tallulah's scary.
She's scary. She's gangster scary. So I just find the character. I was fascinated with my own characters. I was just kind of like, wow, she's like, you know, and like I'm saying, the plot was challenging for me to kind of weave around and, you know, close the little loopholes that would be gaping, because, you know, you're always trying to write this whole cloak and dagger type of narrative. So, yeah, that was, I liked it because of how much it challenged me. Yeah.
So, the best
I like it. I it probably would have been one of my favorites. But the thing is, I feel like the fans love it more than me. They know it more than me. They've analyzed it more than me. They know that, like, they know Bundle in and out. So I'm almost feeling like humbled, like I have less to do with it. It's like it's the fans' book. It's not mine. I feel like it belongs to
the same with Bundle, right? And like, I think you've spoken a little bit about this, right? Is people have an idea of intelligence, right? So there's this conventional idea of intelligence. And when you initially think of somebody like Bundle, you wouldn't think of Bundle as being intelligent, right?
Yes.
But Blessed Girl forces you to shed a lot of your own stereotypes. So you read that and you realize, no, man, this girl's actually very intelligent, right? And it's also for me just a commentary on the ways that we think about.
Oh my gosh, somebody says definitely I read it in a single seat, didn't eat or anything until I was done. Oh my goodness, it must come with a health warning.
It's true, right? Because you're just
She says Black Widow Society.
Yes, I'm saying, like, with Tallulah, you're just like, what's going on here? But why is Tallulah this person? But yeah, I think that, you know, it was interesting because you think of, like, what happens to a Bundle, right? What happens to a Bundle who may not be somebody who is academically strong, but is intelligent in so many other ways, right? And what does it mean for society not to make space for a Bundle, you know? And how much of how Bundle turns out is, like, a communal complicity, like, you should think of her mother and Uvuse and all these other things that happen to Bundle, it becomes difficult to just dismiss her, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's
why the other reason why the character haunts us so much is that I think we all know somebody who's kind of a bontle or who is like a bontle. Like we all knew somebody in the past or even in high school or adversity who was kind of this beautiful girl who just, you know, relied mostly on her beauty and was kind of not necessarily as cunning as Bontle maybe is, but I think the reason that character haunts people so much is that we all know somebody like that. And I think when you get into the pain and the hurt and the insecurities and everything else, all the layers of Bontle's character, the character in the novel, then you start, as you say, your mind goes back to that person, and then you start thinking differently about them, and you start asking questions that maybe you've never asked, you know, because you've kind of taken them at face value, or you've dismissed them, or whatever the attitude might be. And I think the way that the story ends leaves you with an even bigger question mark, like you're almost concerned, like what actually happens to this person, or what has happened to this person, or what happens to people like this, you know?
So that's why fans are just, we know Bontle, you know, you feel like you know a Bontle. The men in that book are so interesting. They are so interesting. Like, I was thinking of like Mr. Emmanuel the other day, and I'm like, what an interesting character. So I actually want to talk to you about your characters just in general, you know? So you've taken us through the process of fine-tuning the work, of editing, etc. But I want to know, do your characters come to you? How do you form your characters in your mind? I mean, there have been writers who, I think it was Toni Morrison, actually said sometimes the characters come and sit with her and they talk to her and she can visualize them.
Yeah, I think characterization in book writing is one of the strangest. It really is. It's kind of a spiritual thing, actually. It's one of the stranger aspects of writing, because usually with me, for instance, you kind of have a blueprint of what this person is, their likes, their dislikes, you know, kind of a character Bible, although I don't really do like the whole analytical character Bible, but you have an outline of, okay, Mr. Emmanuel is like this, he's bold, he's confident, he's successful, he's kind of like an alpha male. But where I'm saying it's almost like a spiritual, like it becomes kind of a spiritual experience, is that, you know, these people talk to you, they come to life, and sometimes they even contradict or they antagonize the whatever plan you had for them, you know. So I could plan, I mean, it surprised me even with this manuscript that I'm working on. Like, I had a whole scene crafted in my head and it was going to go like this because I wanted the outcome to be a certain way. But when I was writing the scene, the character took over. The character said something completely different to what I wanted her to say. Like, I really wanted this character to say this so that I can get the outcome that I want. But the character said something completely different. And I actually thought, this actually makes sense. This character is more likely to say this in this kind of situation than what I had in mind, you know. Yes, it comes from observing people. Sometimes you could base a character, the outline of the character, on somebody that you know, you know. You could be like, okay, yeah, I think this person is similar to so-and-so, and I'm going to even dress her or him like so-and-so. But then as the character takes on a life of their own, they detract from your plan. And you're thinking, oh no, now you've made my life difficult because now I have to rewrite the way that I wanted this thing to end. But yeah, it's spiritual. It's a spiritual process. I'm sticking to that.
I am so curious about this latest novel. Like, I actually just cannot wait for it. I want to know what inspired it. We haven't really spoken about what inspired this novel. Is there someone that we know in the novel? I feel like every time I read a novel, I'm always like, this seems like someone I know. So I'm really curious. I think we're all like super hyped for this next novel, because it has all of the things I liked from your previous book. So there's the crime element, thinking of Red Ink. There's the relationships and like just trying to figure yourself out from the 30th candle. There's this, I guess, this element of trying to figure out what's happening that you would do in like Black Widow society. And there's still a little bit of that like decadence and that bling, you know, that we saw in Blessed Girl. So I really have to know what inspired this next novel.
It was inspired by a story that my husband came back from, like, he's drinking with his friends. He came back and told me the story. And I was like, wow, what? That happened to somebody? I'm putting that in a novel. It literally is that. And I hope he doesn't. It is literally that. He told me, like, this. I just thought this is just the most insane thing. And it had to do, it's the body, it's the plot around the body. Like, it literally, somebody was with somebody, the person slept, and then, you know, they were stealing each other, they were having this thing. And then, yeah, that's what happened. So I just thought, okay, so what happens next? I don't know what happened next with the person, but yeah, the question is, what happens next? What do you do?
Gracious. Can't wait. I know everyone was just like, yo, this book must come out. But I guess I'm just curious about, you know, before we wrap up, what are some of your writing influences? You know, I mean, I read 30th Candle and I was like, these people sound like me. They sound like me and my friends. These are characters I can see, you know? So I'm really curious about your writing influences. Who are some of the writers that have influenced your writing and your ability to craft characters in the way that you do?
Sure. I don't think there's like a specific writer that I would say has had the strongest influence. I think like when I was younger, I was always kind of like a thriller, like I was into my thriller writers. And so I was, you know, I was reading Stephen King, I was reading John Connolly and those kind of people, John Deva and all of those kind of people. But as I evolve as a writer, I read a lot of African literature as well. So I can't pinpoint, you know, one particular writer or type of writing that I would say has influenced me the most. I think I just like to tell stories that are believable, like I said, with characters that are relatable, that are not kind of cookie cutter or picture perfect, you know. And I like situations that, you know, I can relate to. I like to put my characters in context that sometimes are a bit wild, a bit out there, but they are such that they may be those strange, unpredictable things that can happen to anyone. Talk about the unpredictable. And so they place, you know, the characters in a situation where they need to make decisions that take them out of themselves, out of what their preconceived ideas of who they are, you know, push them to be better people or worse people than they thought they were, or kinder, or you know, more compromising. Maybe you think you're an uncompromising person, but then you're in the situation and you realize that maybe your humanity has to surpass your pride. So I just like stories like that, that just challenge just our nature.
So we've got a couple of questions that are asking, what are you reading at the moment?
I've got them here in front of me. I bought them yesterday because I've been experiencing a book drought. So I've picked up this book, which everybody's raving about.
Yes.
The Secret Life of Baba Seger's
Wives. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's I posted this book yesterday and, you know, people were just losing their minds. So I've started reading it and I am absolutely hooked. And then the thriller lover in me, you probably won't know this one, The First Mistake. And the thing is, I'm so bad with authors. I read so, and I'm a speed reader. I read very fast. I could finish a book in one or two sittings. So it's difficult for me to recall who did I read like last week, because I go through books like
so quickly,
a race car driver. Yeah.
And do you find, are you able to read while you're writing? Or do you find
no,
you have to put everything
that's why
away
I was, yeah, that's why I was so ravenous yesterday, because I've been writing so much. So, and I find it distracting to read. Unless I write a book that is so far removed from anything that I know I will ever write. So I was reading a book while I was writing, while I was completing this manuscript. I've been reading in the bath a book about two women during the First World War. They are lesbian lovers. It's kind of based on a true story. So it's so different from anything I would write, you know, and my kind of storytelling. So it has been fascinating and has been keeping me going. But
what is the title of the book?
What's that?
What's the title of the book?
Oh my gosh.
Book?
I'm actually wanting to go to the bathroom, which is where I read it, and like pick it up and see the title, because like I can't remember the title. I will post it on your page once I'm done with this chat.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We are so excited. Yo, guys, I can't wait for Critical But Stable. You need to actually just send this book and let it
No!
Because we are going through everything as a country, okay? We're going through a lot as a country.
Yeah, I know. You need like some nice escapist fiction, yeah?
The thing is, you know, I want to say that it's escapist fiction, but your characters feel very real. I think that's why I was like super disturbed by Red Ink, because I just felt like, you, I could bump into this person on the street. So escape is an interesting word, but some great fiction, yes.
Some great
fiction. We are ready for it. But I guess the next question is, how do people contact you on social media? We know they'll be buying all your books after this, and they're gonna have tons of questions. So how do people contact you on social media?
Okay, so I'm on Instagram as Angela Makolwa Mwabelo, on Twitter as Angela Makolwa, Facebook Angela Makolwa Mwabelo. So yeah, you can get in touch with me, inbox me. That's how I've been doing it with people for years and years, readers. And I've also got a fan page. Sorry, if you can't join my personal page on Facebook, I've got an Angela Makolwa fan page that you can join, right, an author page. So yeah, lots of platforms for us to chat and take the conversation further.
Yes, and also for people to campaign for that thing that we spoke about earlier.
No, it's a no.
No, it's fine. But once again, thank you so much, Angela. This has been such a great conversation. As you can tell, I've loved all of your books.
I know, you were even at my book launch.
Yes. I've loved all of your books, and I really love the fact that, you know, this is woman-centered literature. I hate chick lit. I don't even know what that is. It's woman-centered literature that is so affirming, because you read this and you're like, oh my gosh, these people look like me, they sound like me, they are speaking lingo that makes sense, that speaks like me, and so these kinds of stories are important. And I absolutely can't wait for Critical But Stable.
It's a very critical but stable condition. Like the lockdown.
I'm Critical But Stable waiting for your book, because, you know, my sequel is not coming, but I can't do.
One day. I get a bozuki, so they like voted it down.
They're ignoring them. Agents of darkness, they're ignoring them. But I really think that Black Widow Society needs to be made into a movie.
It's coming, so I'm told they've bought the rights. So
yes,
we wait and we see.
I've been waiting for this movie, so it actually has to be
me
made.
Me too, now. Hey?
It has me to be too. Made into a movie, because, wow, says no. But I guess that just speaks to how amazing your writing is and how amazing your books are. We can't wait for the movie. We can't wait for Critical But Stable.
Massive says, can't wait for the movie. Let's get the popcorn out.
Yeah, no, we can't wait. You know, we can't wait. But once again, thank you so much for joining us. It's been super, super
amazing.
Exciting. Yeah. People want to know who will play Tallulah. Stay tuned.
Ooh, stay tuned and come up with your own suggestions for the casting crew so that they get it right. They've got to get Tallulah right. Eh?
Actually, I'm obsessed think that's Tallulah. I think that should be like a social media challenge, right? Like,
it should be, yeah. People should find our
favorite, the best actress to play the characters best. In Black Widow Society.
Masibuye has suggestions. Okay, before we go, who? Masibuye?
Yeah, we actually want to know who are the suggestions.
Kat got her tongue. She's scared of saying who she wants to be the... Okay. I thought she would type in two minutes.
Okay, she'll tweet us. She'll tweet you and us and tell us, and then we can start a thread because I also have some ideas. Oh, Nambi Tayez.
Oh, you know, we had this. So the screenplay has been it's been optioned by a few companies. Like I think it's on its third option. So I think initially when it had just been optioned,
so there was the excitement that it's gonna go into screen and all of that. And so I put out the word and people said Nambita, but that was like 7 years ago. So it's, if people are still saying Nambita 7 years later, I don't know. I ain't saying nothing. Well, who's your Tallulah?
My Tallulah would be like, I have a Nambita or like Batiswa Andaka. I can like see her.
Yes, I could see Batiswa as well. I could just see it happening.
Yeah.
Sure. And I guess the chills, you know? Thinking of Batiswa.
And I guess now I'm thinking also of like a Cindy Lati.
Me too. I was scared to say it, but yeah. I mean, like, she's an obvious choice because she's killing that role on
yes, the river. Yes, yeah. Yes, that's why I was like, you can do this.
Yeah, I know she can do that.
So I've clearly been thinking about this movie a lot. They can call me for recommendations. But yeah, once again, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for just being so open. We can't wait to go over the table. Yeah, it was lit. We were talking past, present, future. We can't
future.
Wait for
all
future.
The time
future. We can't wait for future. But yeah, so thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. We're speaking
thank
to
you
Prof.
everybody for participating.
Please go out and buy Angela's books. They are available everywhere. Like, you are not a bookstore if you don't have
online,
Angela's
offline,
books.
Online, everywhere.
Online,
everywhere.
Offline. Please support indie bookstores. The Book Lounge, Bridge Books, Love Books, Book Capital as well. And you can get a 10% discount if you use Cheeky Natives as a code at...
In Afroculture.
Book Lounge. And Afroculture at Book Lounge. And you can also get the books from Afroculture as well. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much.
We can't wait
for the next book. Bye, bro. Right. See you tomorrow for Prof Pumla. Bye.
I'll join you tomorrow.
Yay. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.